Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tram. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group, NCA, in Zuchus of Rivka Bela, Bas Nechama Shifra, and in honor of Rabbi Tram.
Back to Halacha in a Year. We are learning today Miss Siman Kuf Yodalad 114 in the Kitzur, and that is the topic of Mechiras Chametz, selling one's chametz. Just a little bit of background over here. This is a relatively new institution. Technically speaking, there are two ways of avoiding having chametz on Pesach. Number one is cleaning, destroying, and checking for it. That's all part of the bedikha and biur process. That means to say, I'm throwing out chametz, I'm eating chametz, I'm cleaning and checking that there's nothing there. That's the main process of getting rid of chametz. And the secondary process is bitul chametz, where I'm annulling that which remains. So I've got rid of things, I may not find a few crumbs, I may not find things which are hidden under the floorboards, I am still going to annul it. And this way, when I come into Pesach, I have no chametz, and I've annulled the rest. However, over the course of history, it turns out that Jews have owned a lot of things, including, and this is where it really came into play, was liquor, where liquor is often grain-based, so beer and whiskey for sure are chametz, and people would have large stores of it, some people would even trade in it, and people would have large amounts of chametz, and it wasn't going to be the case that they're going to pour it all down the drain, or they go and get rid of it, or drink it all beforehand. And so therefore, there came a question, is there another possibility? And so over the course of history, the notion of Mechiras Chametz has come into being over the last few centuries. And you'll see throughout the halakhic course of history a number of examples of how this has been done. What essentially is done is as follows. The Torah tells us that Jews are not allowed to have or see any chametz, any grain products that are leavened in their possession. But non-Jews have no command. So if one is able to sell their chametz to a non-Jew, then they are fine. So let's go through a few basics of how this works as well. If you'll read the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch inside, you'll notice that he is talking to the audience who is the average consumer, the person themselves, and it seems that in the days of yore, the average fellow himself would sell the chametz to his non-Jewish neighbor. Today, that practice has long since disappeared, and the practice today is not such. Today, we let the rabbi do it, and he sets up either a beis din or a whole process in order to do this, and what the regular folks do is they come to the rabbi, authorize the rabbi, do what's called a shtar harshah, which is an authorization document with a kinyan, which allows the rabbi to represent them, which means to say that the rabbi can therefore put in a lot more expertise into that sale and ensure that it is the best sale possible, and with all the legal and all halachic necessities for that to be the best possible sale, representing everybody else, which now relieves every person from having to do this, because there are a lot of pitfalls, and it's much better this way to be done, and lots of questions that need to be answered through this process as well. Let's jump straight into a few basic questions. What happens if I just annul all my chametz? You know, like, I don't want to sell my chametz. I'll just, you know, I have a basement of whiskey, and I'll annul it, and then after Pesach, I'll reclaim it. So that unfortunately is what's called chametz she'avar alav Pesach. Even though you say you're annulling it, you're not annulling it. If somebody were to break into your house and to take all of that, you'd be very upset, even though you annulled it. And therefore, la halacha, that is considered chametz she'avar alav Pesach, which is chametz which Pesach has passed over, and you will not be able to use it. You're not allowed to use it. You're not allowed to sell it. So therefore, that does not work. So let's go through, let's understand how the sale works. When does the sale actually take place? The sale takes place before Pesach, before the time of Biur Chametz, or removing the Chametz. So by the time that time, the fifth hour of the day comes to an end, at that point in time, a person is free of ownership of Chametz. So how serious is this? Is a sale? The Kitzur points out it has to have the same legal bearing as any other deal one would have in the marketplace. If you're going to be selling goods, you're going to make sure that your goods are sold with the document. You're going to make sure that there's witnesses. You're going to make sure this is done with all the loops. You're jumping through all the loops because you don't want anything to happen and a person to walk away with your merchandise or to undercut you. So you do the same thing with chametz. And that's how the actual shtar mechira, the actual bill of sale, is a very serious document, which is both legally and halachically acceptable. Where should the sold chametz go? So let's say I'm authorizing the rabbi to do this. So where should it go? So it should not belong in the Jew's house. It is best that the non-Jew would take the chametz they're buying from the Jew. And if that's not possible, one would need to rent out that area, whether that be the room or the closet that the chametz resides in, to the non-Jew. So therefore, let's say it is the pantry, and I put all my grain products that I'm not able to get rid of in the pantry. I will lock that pantry. but I will also be renting out the premises. So which means if you look carefully at the authorization document that you are working with your rabbi, you will notice that it says the stipulation in it, that there's a rental of the rights of the area, which is why you can't just say my kitchen if you're going to be walking through your kitchen, because you're renting the areas listed in the authorization document. So it means that taped cabinet in the kitchen on the left, which is now also, by the way, rented out, and the chametz in it is sold. So specificity is crucial to this whole process. How much should the sale be for? So it needs to be a realistic price, and it needs to include the rental rights of the areas as well. So it can add up to a lot, especially considering the most expensive items we still have today in grain products are alcohol. And those do add up if a person certainly has a collection. How much chametz is acquired by the non-Jew? So how is it? How is the chametz acquired by the non-Jew? So what the rabbi will do is they'll set up a legal document which is signed by the non-Jew, so it has legal bearing. But there's also a few halachic aspects to it as well. There's what's called a kinyan agav, which means that the rights to those grain products is also bought because they're renting the areas, and now the areas are rented to them, so they will acquire it through the area that it is encased in. And there'll also be a kinyan kesef, where the non-Jew will pay money, and certainly the down payment for it, which will be one aspect of it. There's a kinyan chalipin, which is an exchange of lifting a item of value of that the rabbi presents to them. And number two, and similarly also a handshake. So a number of kinyanim are put together. A number of acquisitions legally and halachically are put into the sale to ensure that it has a standing on all levels as well. Not all kinyanim work for a non-Jew, which is why these are specifically ones which have been adjusted so for this particular case. Does one need to stipulate the weight of the chametz? The answer is no, but the authorization document and the sale document usually stipulates the type of leavened bread being sold. Sometimes people would stipulate specifically all the pasta boxes, all the oats, the 1 minute oats. But today we generally say all categories, and there'll usually be a list of the different categories of leaven products, and that's usually in the authorization document and the sale document, which will now be more encompassing and more general. Does the Jew need the non-Jew need access? The answer is yes, because he is buying those products and he is renting that area. He has full rights to get to it. In the old days, keys were actually collected. So when the rabbi was being authorized to sell the chametz, key to the property or the room was given to the rabbi directly. Today, it's actually because a lot of times people have cell phones, it's easy to contact people. Also, there's combination locks on doors. A lot of times what the rabbi will do is ask the contact person who can give access to the property when the non-Jew would want to access the assets he bought and the access to them. Do we sell kalim? So let's say I have chametz kalim. I'm going to close them up over Pesach. Do I need to sell them? The answer is no. And in fact, one should not sell the chametz, even though there are absorptions in the walls of those kalim, assuming they're cleaned. We do not sell those, and part of the reason is because we would otherwise require tevila. Those are now become owned by a non-Jew. When the non-Jew decides to sell it back, that would be buying vessels from a non-Jew, and all of those kelim would require tefillah. So one has to be careful not to, which is why if you look through the authorization and the sale document, you'll see that it excludes them. Now, can the Jew who sold the chametz place an additional lock on the chametz room? So a person will say, look, I'm really selling it to this fellow, but I don't want anybody coming to my house, so I'm going to put a second lock on this pantry door because I don't want anybody shuffling through my pantry, my basement, my storage areas. The answer is no, if that's the case, because you are demonstrating that that's not a real sale. If you're going to sell something to somebody and not allow them access to it, that means that you don't really believe it's a sale. And if it's not really a sale, then it's not doing anything for you. What if I can't rent out the room? I can't rent out the room because I need to enter it on Pesach. So let's say I need to go in the garage, but there's chametz in boxes in the garage. What do I do? So in that case, one would divide the room. So I would put all the boxes of chametz on the one side and place a barrier, right? We'll maybe tape a sheet across that side of the room and mark chametz so a person will not access it. And in the authorization document, say this half of the room behind the sheet is where the chametz is and is being rented. That's why you specify the specific area, which will now allow you to walk into the rest of the garage because that area that you're walking into was not rented out and that area and nothing in it is sold. So it's important to be as specific as possible, especially when you are still living in that house or other people will be in that house. You cannot sell something and rent that property to a non-Jew and have other people walking through the area that are over Yom Tov. Even if it's somebody to just to clean the house, even if it's somebody who's staying in your house while you're away for Yom Tov, you cannot rent it out to somebody, to a non-Jew, and then have somebody trespass on what is legally his property as well. And similarly, when it comes to this, how will the non-Jew reach those areas if you divided up a room? The answer is, if you look in the sale document, it also rents him the rights of access. Meaning to say, if you're going to sell him half of that garage, you're also renting the rights of entry through the front door to get to the garage, to get to the area behind him. That does not give him the legal rights to go upstairs to the bedroom. It does give him the legal rights to get to that garage. This is all stipulated in the document. What if I'm renting the house from another Jew in the first place? So let's say I'm a renter. How am I able to rent that area, sublet it essentially, to a non-Jew and sell stuff in it? I don't know. I'm not allowed to sublet. So in that case, you need to get rishus permission from the person who is your landlord. You're right. If you are a family living in the city and you're renting, you would have to ask the landlord, do I have the rights to sell the chametz and rent the specific areas over the course of Pesach? Here is the most important part of this question. Can I stipulate that he will sell it back to me? The answer is no. This is a full sale. This sale takes place on Erev Pesach, and in years where Erev Pesach is Shabbos, it takes place the day before, and it is a full sale. The way it usually works is as follows. This is the way it is set up. It is set up that the sale goes through as of the time of the Kenyan, and this is all done, documented with witnesses, with the handshake, with the signatures, with the money, with the chalip, and everything done, and that sale takes place on Erev Pesach. At that point in time, though, all those products in all of those houses no longer belong to those Jews. They are owned by the non-Jew, and they are those areas are rented, the areas containing them. However, the non-Jew, I mean, if you add up the amount of money that looks like, we're talking about a significant amount of money if you add up all of those foods and all of that alcohol and all those areas, and that's going to add up to a lot of money. So the way it's worked out is the non-Jew pays a down payment at the beginning on that sale. The down payment, of course, like when it comes to a house, you pay a down payment, but you get rights to the house. You have title deed. You now own it. So he owns it from that moment onwards, even though he's not paid the rest. But the stipulation is as follows, that he has 9 days to finish paying up. He has nine days of grace to finish paying up the balance from the down payment. And that time that is stipulated as to the when he has that grace period until is the night of Motzei Pesach, on the night when Pesach goes out, just after Pesach. At that point in time, he meets with the rabbi, and he has two options. He can either pay the balance of what he owes for it, because he owns the chametz. He owns those grain products already for 9 days, but he can now pay the rest of it and continue to own it. Or he can exercise a buyback option and allow the rabbi, authorized by the various members of the community, to now buy it back from him. If he exercises the buyback option, it does not mean to say the sale was invalid. It means the sale was valid for 9 days, and he has exercised that option, but it's totally up to him. If the non-Jew decides that he is going to save away all his money and pay the balance, he is entitled to keep all of that. So technically speaking, every Pesach, there is that risk that when people are selling their chametz, if that non-Jew decides to pay the balance by the end of Pesach, he is entitled to, and that is the way it works. Can I sell it to a disaffected Jew, a non-observant Jew? The answer is no. What if I have goods in transit? So they're on a boat, they're on a plane, so I can sell them. I can sell them as they are in transit. If they arrive on Pesach, the Jew cannot deal with them because they belong entirely to the non-Jew. What if one has a mill for grinding? In those days, they used to pay the commission by giving back grain, sometimes just fermented. So in that case, you need to sell the rights over Pesach because you cannot get payment in grain for that over Pesach. What about animals which eat grain products? So the diet should be changed. Fish, cats, guinea pigs, dogs, needs to be changed. And if you cannot change it, then the animal needs to be sold, because your animal cannot be benefiting from this over the course of Yom Tov. What if a non-Jew has chametz on the Jew's property? Is it an issue? So a non-Jew is storing in your facility, in your house, some grain products. It's owned by him, but it's yours. Well, if the Jew bears responsibility for it, so let's say thieves break in and it's stolen, would you bear responsibility? If you, as the Jew who's guarding it, bear financial responsibility for it, then you're not allowed to keep it there on Yom Tov, because you have a degree of responsibility over it. What if the Jew has chametz in a non-Jew's Jewish property? So that is still a problem, even if the non-Jew bears responsibility for damage, and that is because you still own it. And finally, what do I do with Jews who will likely not sell their chametz on Pesach? One has to be careful about buying from them or using their chametz after Pesach, because that becomes chametz sh'avar alav Pesach. This becomes particularly sticky when it comes to Jewish store owners or distributors who are to large stores who are Jewish and are not interested in doing mechiras chametz. That becomes really complicated using their stores. When you are blessed to be in a neighborhood where there is a vada kashrus, where there is an oversight agency, which is a non-for-profit, which is just looking over the particulars of that community, then they will take care of the mechiras chametz of all of the stores. It becomes more complicated when you're dealing with larger chains or in areas where they don't have a VAD, when it becomes more complicated to know these details, and a little bit of research would need to be done. This is a little bit of the basics of mechiras chametz, a very fascinating concept which requires a lot of expertise and being very careful, because the stakes are high. Owning chametz on Pesach is a very serious thing. With this, we conclude. Have a wonderful and meaningful day.